Can you hear me all right? I'll tell you what this is about, and when you're ready, you can say your name and I'll start. Is that all right? Hello, hello. All right. The title of this is Healthy People, Healthy Planet. The speaker is Dr. Harlan Brundtland, former Director General of the World Health Organization. And this speech was given in Oslo on the 18th of April this year. Ready? Say your name. Ladies and gentlemen, last September, the Secretary General of the United Nations, Kofi Annan, made an urgent call to the nations of the world in an address to the General Assembly. Having seen the shared vision at the Millennium Summit 3 years ago, a vision of global solidarity and collective security, he reminded delegates that recent events had called that consensus into question and announced that he would establish a high level panel of eminent personalities to analyze the current challenges to peace and security, to consider the contribution which collective action can make in addressing them, and to recommend ways of strengthening the United Nations. I'm honored to be part of that crucial process and will focus much of my attention on the challenges of social injustice, disease, lack of development, and poverty. We need to refocus attention on the achievement of the Millennium Development Goals, the common struggle to protect our environment, and the struggle for human rights, democracy, and good governance. Let me share with you some of my own experience, which has led me to concentrate on the links between people and the environment, between health and development, and the crucial observation that there is no common future unless we invest in people, in all people, in their future health and well-being. Without this, there will be no hope of sustainable development, prosperity, and peace. Over the past 40 years, I have been deeply involved with three powerful movements: for democracy and the participation of women, for the environment, and for global public health. The environment moved to center stage in the 1980s and has stayed there. We have been through a decade of real gains for democracy, and women's participation has made substantial strides too. Major interest in global health is scaling up now. Are there parallels to be drawn? The first reflection is on the key importance of raising awareness. Progress in such areas is very limited without solid and informed public debate, which creates a real political momentum for action. This process is primarily driven by civil society and the media. With the environment, a major event that triggered attention was the report from the Club of Rome. This not only raised awareness, but also inspired a profound ethical debate. At first, however, this debate was mainly limited to those with special interests. The issue did not move into central decision making. What was lacking was a convincing, undeniable link to economics. As a young environment minister, I realized that you cannot make real changes in society unless the economic dimension of an issue is fully understood. This is what took the environment from being a cause for the convinced and marginal Greens to becoming an issue given real attention by major players. It was necessary for the scientific facts to come in. The true costs of environmental degradation were analysed and spelled out in figures. The political importance of environment changes became an issue for voters. Then, gradually, governments and parliaments started to establish incentives to change behavioural patterns among industry and consumers. Indeed, with an increasingly strong and robust economic argument, it was possible to make sense both of government investment in the environment and commercial investment in the development of cleaner technologies. Finance ministers and heads of state were made to understand the developmental consequences of environmental policies. We moved from a situation of market failure to one in which the market was made to serve global interests, and sustainable development has gradually come to be seen as a global public good. Recently, we have been witnessing similar processes with the issues of health. The political issue of world health. The speaker is the former Director General of the World Health Organization. When you're ready to go, say your name. Ladies and gentlemen, there is a widespread belief that the weather treats all people equally. As the saying goes, no matter whether you are rich or poor, everybody gets wet when it rains. Wrong. Even when it comes to the weather, the poor are worse off, much worse. When a storm hits, the poor are the most likely to live near the waterfront and in low-lying areas. Their sheds are made of flimsy material, which easily gets smashed to bits by wind and water. And when the storm has passed, leaving destruction and disease in its path, the poor have no insurance to pay for damage and treatment. Their water supply is more likely to be contaminated, and the risks of them falling victim to epidemics are much greater than for the better off. This we all know, but what is becoming increasingly clear is that the poor are also bearing the main burden of the long-term climatic changes to our environment. Health scientists working within the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change have confirmed that poor populations tend to be the most vulnerable to the health impacts of climatic variation and climate change. Deprived communities, lacking wealth, social institutions, and depending on others for information, resources, and expertise, are more vulnerable to ill health in the face of climate change stresses. This vulnerability is most extreme among the poorest. This is a serious cause for concern. Social inequality and environmental issues are intimately connected. What can we do to address these profound challenges? We need to revert to the broader agenda of sustainable development. The message of our common future, reiterated at Rio and in Johannesburg, was the link between environment and development. We called for a new era of economic growth, growth that is forceful and at the same time socially and environmentally sustainable. In that process, the industrialized countries must show their share of solidarity. Populations have a right to lift themselves out of poverty. The developed world cannot just say, sorry, there's no room left for you. We need to continue the work to take the climate convention further, step by step, based on evidence and new mechanisms of burden sharing. Health is a yardstick for how we succeed. In the health field, concerted action over the past 50 years has led to significant progress. Half a century ago, the majority of the world's population died before the age of 50. Today, average life expectancy in developing countries is 64 years and is projected to reach 71 years by 2020. As we look to the future, we are presented with two sharply different scenarios. Which of them we will turn into reality depends on the extent to which we can secure political backing for firm global action. The first scenario is truly horrendous. The spread of HIV/AIDS, tuberculosis and malaria, the emergence of antibiotic resistance, climate change leading to the spread of vector-borne diseases, increase in extreme weather events and disasters, and the threat to food security. This is not a worst-case scenario. It is where we are heading today, unless we take action now. Not in 10 or 15 years, but this year and next. The second scenario is one where the mortality of the main infectious diseases such as malaria, tuberculosis and HIV/AIDS is drastically reduced, where issues such as global warming and serious pollution are dealt with through forceful international action, and where global negatives such as the impact of tobacco sales and marketing can be dealt with through internationally negotiated regulation.